Doogie.
Sam.
The January transfer window is just around the corner, and I mean that this time. Let's talk through the potential prize gets and best bets as teams across Europe weigh up whether to break glass in case of emergency.
You can play either side, you can go either way, and you can choose off either foot. That's a dream, that, when it comes to wingers. Very Sadio Mane for that reason. He's also really quick, he's really strong, he's good in the air, he works hard. Based on all of those bullet points, there's not a lot of negatives in there.
John Stones had more personality than all of us here to wear in this room. More bold.
Nuno Espirito Santo has left James Ward-Prowse out of the squad.
I think you're going to struggle to find a 25-year-old who's Premier League proven, who's hungry to get into a World Cup squad, who's going to come into this league and absolutely give it everything for 4 months. And that's what I like about Conor Gallagher.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth, and Merry Christmas to those who celebrate. For those that don't, we hope you enjoyed your festive period nonetheless. I am your host, Sam Tai, bringing you good tidings. Tidings,
very good, very good.
Thomas Miller.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Joining me is Doogie Critchley. How do we Christmas up your name, Doogie Critchley?
Doogie, I don't know.
Doogie Critchmas.
Critchmas,
Doogie
fine.
Critchmas. Oh, Crystal Toe and Wine.
Done. Crystal Toe and Wine.
Bit of Cliff Richard. Lovely stuff. And joining us is our producer, Jack Frost Collins.
Nice. Frosty Jack. Sam, I got to say, I thought that intro was exceptional.
It was.
That was like really smooth and
rhyming.
Like sort of rhymed.
Yeah. There was a lot going on.
There was a lot going on. And I just thought it was like probably your best work. Maybe ever, actually. It's really genuinely good.
Do you mean the bit before the music?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
I thought it was really genuinely very good. I'm sure you're going to muck it up with the rest of said podcast, but I was very impressed, so well done.
Thank you very much. We are recording this just in advance of Christmas, but Jack reliably informs me this will be released on Boxing Day. So.
Also, for anyone watching rather than listening, what a resplendent Christmas jumper that is, Sam.
Yes.
Talk it through for the listeners.
It's my, what is it? It's my Inter Milan original Ronaldo classic
Ronaldo
football shirt
in the Pirelli
jumper.
Font.
Yeah, it's a beaut. It's a classic football shirt's beaut. It really is.
How long have you had it?
Several years. It's got quite a few alcohol stains on it, which belie its age, unfortunately.
A bit of bread sauce as well.
No.
You don't like bread
sauce?
I'm
not a bread sauce guy, and I'm not a cranberry guy.
Do you have turkey? What do you have?
I try to avoid turkey because I think it's really rubbish. Mm-hmm. So I usually cook something better, like
beef. Like a big beef, don't you?
Yeah. Big nice. Time. Oh, I remember going on about it a lot last year. Yeah, that beef I cooked.
I do.
This is a good Christmas opinion. Turkey is like rubbish. I will eat it on Christmas
Day. It
goes
so long though. Although if you don't like it, I suppose that just prolongs the heat.
I will eat it and I like a turkey sandwich and all of the rest of it, but like, If I've been trying to convince like anyone who will listen to like have like a goose instead on Christmas Day, I'd love that. I've never had this.
I was gonna say.
I think in Poland they have duck, baked duck. Oh, that sounds well good.
That does sound good.
But I think like turkey being a bit rubbish is a pretty reasonable Christmas opinion.
So at Mama Critchmas's house, aka nice. My mum's house, nice. She did goose a couple of years ago, like a kind of medieval family, and it was good. But unlike turkey, there was barely anything left the next day.
Well, yeah.
So Boxing Day it's much smaller, and there's not that actually much on it.
It's because you wanted to eat.
Yeah. Here's the problem.
It was too good.
It was popular. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I've hosted at least three Christmases in a row, so I call the shots. Mm. So I don't have to eat turkey if I don't want to. I just cook something else.
Nice.
This concept will be tested as the years go by. Probably starting next year when I think I'm at my sister's. So we'll see what... Oh, no, because she also hates turkey. So the streak continues, baby. Right, cool.
I feel outnumbered.
Lovely stuff. Right, we are recording this in advance of Christmas, so I can ask you this question. And by the time the podcast is released, we'll know if your wishes came true. What have you asked Santa for this year, Doogie?
Oh, I went quite sort of early 30s and asked for quite practical things. I'm asked for a new mic for my studio,
okay.
For my YouTube channel.
Good.
Thanks for watching, everyone, this year. Thank you. Please watch in 2026 as well.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
I am really short of pants at the moment.
Okay.
So
happens to the best of us.
And I got new shoes. I got new Sambas, but I already got them for myself.
Other brands are available.
Yes.
Not to Doogie.
Not
Critchley,
to Doogie.
Not.
No. Not since
just
I was 13.
The argument. There you go. Yeah. There we go. Perfect. Jack, what did you ask for?
Well, I'm going on my honeymoon on Boxing Day. So hence the reason, as in fact, as you're listening to this, I will be on a plane to South America. So yeah. I'm basically just, I needed some summer clothes because I don't have any, because I like basically remodeled my wardrobe in the summer. So I was like, well, I'm going to have to just ask for it for Christmas. Honestly, if I haven't got what I've asked for Christmas from a, you know, from a, like clothes perspective. I mean, big trouble. Well, not necessarily naked, but I will be going to 40 degree Brazil and Argentina in jeans and long tops. So mostly I've just asked for kind of like shorts and stuff, to be honest, Sam. It's been quite low key. We've been trying to have a smaller Christmas between Lucy and I because we're going on a honeymoon. Wedding, and that's honeymoon, basically that's basically our present to each other in so many ways.
Very Sam nice.
I've asked for two things.
Oh, nice.
AirPod Pros.
Sick.
And World Peace.
Nice. Always a banker to go for that second one as well.
I'm very hopeful. Yeah. I'm very, very hopeful.
AirPod Pros, okay. Is that the complete noise cancellation?
Yeah. It's just I need
I thought we achieved World Peace when their FIFA Peace Prize was given us.
This is true. Sorry.
You must have forgotten.
My mistake. So really, I'm just asking for the one more thing.
Yeah.
It's
just AirPod Pros.
Yeah. I actually wasn't even conscious of the fact that I didn't have AirPod Pros with noise cancelling until I boarded a flight with our mutual friend, Jack and I's mutual friend, Mateus, to Latvia when I went the other month. Mm. And he looked at my AirPods and scoffed.
Really?
And was like, you need the noise cancelling, bro. Like, proper hurtful stuff.
Really?
Like, I suddenly felt very self-conscious about the poverty of my technology and I need to fix it.
Well, the truth has been doing well this year, so spoil yourself for sure. On that, though, I worry because I'm slightly deaf. Not like... You don't need to worry for me. I'm not playing the violin, but I don't have amazing hearing that if I have noise cancellation in there as well, I will just be hit by a bike or car. So it's just not worth it.
Right.
Are you slightly deaf from like blocking out the hears?
Yes. Yeah. No, but they still get through.
No amount of noise cancellation can block all of those people.
Have
on
you
Twitter.
Been on my Twitter feed? Blimey.
Not at all. Right. Enough about Christmas. Yeah. Let's talk about the January transfer window. We've picked three players each that we think are going to be very prominent stories in this January transfer window, or should be. They'd be good gets, great pickups, any and all of the above. I've got three, you've got three. Mm-hmm. We're going to go 3-2-1 in traditional ranks fashion, and you're going to go first.
I am. I'm going to talk about John Stones. Now, I said last week that I love Tierno Barry. I love John Stones far more than I like Tierno Barry. Or Jack Hinchelwood, who also got a shout out. I really like John Stones.
Okay.
I think, to my mind, he's probably been England's, not necessarily the Premier League's, but England's best centre-back of this century. I think he's been phenomenal for England at every major tournament, pretty much without exception. I think he's been absolutely brilliant. He's now playing his 10th year at Man City. He's 31 years old. He actually feels like he should be maybe 31, 32.
He is 31.
He maybe feels like he should be 32, 33 is what I meant. But he has been plagued by injury. He's only started 22 league games over the last 2.5 years. He's actually only played more than 1,200 league minutes in a season once since 2018-19. That was now a long time ago.
Whoa.
I know.
That's not good.
He's never started more than 23 league games in a season for Man City. This is a guy that has been crucial to so much of their title success in numerous competitions over the last few years. But in terms of minutes played over the last few years, he hasn't done a lot of it. He missed 36 games last season, 12 the year before, 13 the year before that. And the 5-year contract, given those injury issues that he signed in June, is going to expire in 2026. And given those injuries, it doesn't necessarily feel like Man City are going to extend it. And Man City, according to reports that I saw this week, so it's the week of the 16th for you guys in the future, are supposedly planning a defensive rebuild in the summer. Now, I mentioned this to you guys before we started recording. That kind of confused us slightly because they've signed Aitnori in the summer. He has been injured. They've got Gvardiol and Diaz as centre-backs. They need a right-back. I think everyone's accepted that. But they do have a number of centre-backs that they've signed in the last 2 years as well, with Vitor Harais and Kusunov as well arriving in January. Nathan Ake's also, his contract is expiring 2027, so maybe they're looking to sell him in 2026. But unless John Stones is going to be allowed to leave on a free at the end of this season, which could well happen, then I think Man City would be open to offers in January. He started their first three league games of this season. They lost two of them. He actually didn't play particularly well. And he's only played 91 league minutes since. He's been left on the bench six times and out of the squad twice since in the league. So it does feel like he's no longer a key part of Man City's current squad. He's no longer, doesn't feel like he's going to be a part of their future. So he could be gettable in January, I think. And I wonder whether if someone came in for, say, £15 million for a 31-year-old with a bad injury record, that they'd be willing to sell him in January. In terms of where he could go, well, we discussed it briefly last week on last week's podcast. Fabian Schär and Lascelles are out of contract at Newcastle in the summer. Do they want to sign someone to back up Malik Thiaw and Botman over the next few years? Maybe. He's not really in that kind of Newcastle sort of zone of pretty experienced sort of 22 to 26 that they've generally signed at in the last few years, but maybe they'd be interested. Crystal Palace, again, we discussed it last week, very thin squad. Mark Gehi might leave. John Stones, experience in a back three with England. Maybe he could go to Crystal Palace. For a more niche suggestion, Leverkusen, a number of their centre-backs are very young, emerging. Tapsoba, I always feel like someone will come in for Tapsoba at one stage. Milan, I think for all their solid start to the season, I think Gabia, Pavlovic, Tomori, De Winter, it doesn't feel like a really elite set of centre-backs. And for some reason, Juventus, Milan, John Stones, it feels like he would absolutely thrive in Serie A, particularly if he's going to play in a back three. I just think he's a phenomenal player when fit. And at Milan, Juventus, they've got a fantastic record, particularly in the last, maybe more sort of 15, 20 years ago than currently, of extending players' careers. Although you look at the way Modric is playing this year for Milan, I think he would potentially be interested in a move abroad. Obviously, I don't know what's the ins and outs of his family situation. Maybe his kids are starting school. Maybe his wife or partner, whatever it is, really happy over in the UK. But I would love to see John Stones go abroad and become a really key figure at a big Italian side.
Stones is a really interesting start to the discussion. He's not one that I would have thought of, not one that I would have put forward.
Curveball.
Not a criticism. I think it's really interesting. It's just, it's just a bit left field, isn't it? He is a phenomenal player. Like, you've absolutely got my vote on that one, Doogie. Like, I think he's absolutely amazing, or has been. The minutes thing, that has really surprised me. And, it's not, the league minute counter is not the be-all and end-all of Manchester City, because they frequently run deep into four tournaments. So you need to spread that out. And obviously, like, his role in midfield, pushing up from centre-back into midfield next to Rodri, effectively was the tactical joker that helped City win the Champions League. So it's not as if, like, you could criticise that season if he was a bit lacking in Premier League minutes, because he was still impactful elsewhere. But he's only managed over 2,000 league minutes once for Manchester City. And the only other times he's done that is for Everton. That is a bit shocking. So the injuries are a problem. They definitely are. He is injury prone. He does miss a lot of games. But he hasn't been that injured recently. He's just been left on the bench. Mm-hmm. It does kind of feel like they're moving past him. I wonder how much, Pete, anyone would want to put on the table to take on that kind of injury risk.
Do you think my suggestion of 15-20, do you think that's too low? If he's out of contract in the summer? Do you think anyone would want to do
his wage must be very high. And
with him out of contract, I feel like that's perfectly reasonable.
I think I might be on the high side.
Agree. I think you might be looking at like a 10. If you get 10 million for a player who's going to walk away for free in 6 months, I think you take it.
And people won't be able to put that much more on the table, because he will be on a lot of money. So the wages in terms of their forward payments would have to be considered too. I mean, you listed a ton of clubs there, and I can't disagree with many of them. I would just add that if they were to drag through to the summer, and there were some reports today that, Barcelona are clearly shopping the left centre-back market. First of all, John Stones could play for Barcelona. And then secondly, if they were to go and buy like Pau Torres from Villa, that was one of the links, I would have John Stones at Villa in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. In a heartbeat. No hesitation whatsoever. So I think there'd be so much open to Stones here. And there should be a lot of clubs taking a look at that with a careful eye, because of the injury problems.
You have forgotten one thing. As I was reminded multiple times by Everton fans all those years ago, money can't buy you Stones. So you have to wait. I think. Yeah, yeah. Like, I think that's the rules.
Okay, take him off the list. He can't transfer in January unless it's for free.
Fun chat.
There you go. Right, I'm going to stay in Manchester.
Okay.
Flip to the red side. Kobbie Mainoo.
Now this guy could move.
Yeah, for sure. This is Jack's favourite subject as well. How good is Kobbie Mainoo? He loves it. Don't worry, Jack, I won't bring you one on that. We don't need to hear that again. I accept that we got a bit carried away in the summer of 2024 and he may not be as good as was prophesied.
How good did you think he was?
Possibly the best player in the world. All because he could pass a ball straight.
But, I mean, we just coming off that cameo against Bournemouth where he looked good.
We just went a bit mad.
To be fair, I did actually shout a couple of weeks ago that Kieran and Dewsbury Hall should be in the Ballon d'Or conversation. So I don't know.
KDH BDO,
but take everything I say with a slight pinch of salt. Although, like, I do think, with mine in particular, it's one of those really interesting ones that I think I'm probably a bit low on him in general. But I also completely understand why Amorim won't play him in a two-man midfield. Like, yeah. I don't think he has the capability to do that. Like, I think he has to be in the three. And this is why I think this one's super interesting.
Yeah, so I think we've hit... This podcast comes at a good time. Again, as Diggy said, we're recording the week of December 15. It's Tuesday the 16th at the moment. Last night, Monday Night Football, Kobbie Mainoo's brother was walking around Old Trafford in a free Kobbie Mainoo t-shirt. This is peak hysteria.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
It's also amazing.
It's also mega bleak.
It's full Love Island, isn't it? Like, yeah. As in, this dude was on Love Island and now he's walking around Old Trafford with his, you know, his big following from being on reality TV. But like, mate, leave it out. You're not helping anyone, are you? Who are you? Adrian Rabiot's mum.
I doubt Kobbie was even, to Jack's point, I don't think Kobbie would even be that pleased that his brother did that.
Probably
it's
not.
It's just not necessary.
Probably
right
not.
Now.
Well, he started zero Premier League games this season, so I think he's a candidate to move. He will probably play his first game of the season this coming weekend, which you would have already seen, those of you in the future, because Casemiro picked up his fifth yellow card of the season. Ooh. He will be suspended against Aston Villa. And I assume, with Mainoo being thrown on with 30 minutes to go, which is a lot for him, that's quite a good chunk of minutes, he was being readied, match fitness-wise, for the weekend. So it's a big opportunity for Mainoo, because while there may not be much of a future for him at Man United under Amorim, This is a game where you can play against a very good side, prove your worth, and if anybody is looking around and shopping and, you know, peeping in on the loan market, well, there's Kobbie Mainoo right there. This is an opportunity for him. I think he can still become an excellent player. I appreciate that we all went a bit mad on him, but I think he can be coached with playing time, and he still has a very, very high ceiling. He's just not quite what we hoped for so far. So in terms of where I'd be looking at next, we do have to drop the sights a little bit.
Well, do you? There's some big clubs supposedly looking at him. Napoli?
Who do you think? Napoli?
Supposedly looking at him.
Okay, fine. But he's entering a big rotation of players there. Like, yeah. if he is like, I need playing time, Napoli's not the place for him, right? Where Billy Gilmore's on 400 league minutes or something.
Yeah, I mean, look, it would be immediately because they've got an injury crisis in the middle of the park, which is why they've had to switch to formations. But like, long term, I completely agree. And also, Conte is not a sentimental dude, right? Like, he's not going to be like, oh, we got him in. But on Italy, and to reference the shirt you are wearing, Sam.
Yes.
Long-term Hakan Çalhanoğlu replacement, who says no?
I think I say no to that comparison. That's a lot. Hakan Çalhanoğlu is a spectacular
You'd
player.
Want him more in one of those box-to-box roles, I reckon. But yeah, I think...
I think
what you want from him is actually not... You want to emphasise the technicality of his game,
ball
right?
Retention.
Ball retention. So actually, what Çalhanoğlu does in that midfield, where... And actually, his legs are starting to go. Look, Çalhanoğlu's been a wonderful... I'm not saying he's going to get to that level, right?
Yeah, you are.
I'm not. Famously, I'm not the hot one here on Kobbie Mainoo, right? But I do think in terms of, you know, knocking a ball around a midfield... It doesn't need to be that movement-y if it's an Inter, and you just basically command the way that the midfield works with players moving around you.
You're just describing Jorginho at Napoli. So,
yeah, it's not miles off that comparison either. But like, I quite like that as I think that's a nice fit. If he was to move in there, and I know he'd have competition because there's a load of players in there. Aslani's in there, Zielinski's in there. Sucic. They can all do different bits of it. Yeah. But I do think he's probably the most akin to a Çalhanoğlu type in terms of what they have.
So again, when I was looking for his next destination, I was significant indexing more significantly on like, where can he get playing time, like, and so I did set my sights lower. There are Premier League clubs out there that I think could absolutely use him. Like, I think he could play for like Everton and Sunderland, for example.
Absolutely.
I think that there's a couple of teams in La Liga that have got themselves into a bit of a mess, and like, going to Real Sociedad or going to Girona would be like a really good idea for someone like Mainoo to just go and play 15 games in La Liga. I think it would really suit him. I think Fiorentina would take literally anything that they could get in terms of quality, and that wouldn't, I mean, Christ, mate, it had really passed me by how bad it had got.
Why would you do that to poor little Cobby? He's had a tough time of it, and now you want to send him to the single worst club in Serie A. Yeah, it's a mess, and I say that as someone who has a real soft spot for Fiorentina.
Yes, it's not great, but playing time would be quite easy to find. I just want playing time for him. I think he's going to go somewhere in January. I think it'll probably be on loan. Very interested to see the destination. I kind of hope it's a bit more imaginative. Like, I think he'd do really well at Sunderland, but I kind of want him to go to Real Sociedad more, and we'll just see what happens.
I mean, on Sunderland, absolutely we'd take him, especially if he comes at the start of the window when Siddiqui and Diarra are still away. But even when they come back, like, we do need to improve our central midfield options in that department, because Dan Neal's clearly not very trusted in there anymore. And, Xhaka, can he play 38 games? I mean, he may be able to. He's got an amazing injury record, and Siddiqui's shown no signs of slowing down just yet. But yeah, we certainly need more depth. And if Maney wanted to come in and play pretty regularly, potentially start quite a few games as well, come on up.
Why do I have this, like...
Is he all action enough for this Sunderland midfield? Like, this is part of the issue at United, especially if they're playing with the two in the middle.
Sunderland don't play with two, to be fair. They play with...
Since Diarra's been out, we've moved to a two, but we were a three beforehand.
Right. I mean, I do agree that there's a intensity mismatch, I would say, maybe. But there's room for variation within football teams. There is room for diversification there in terms of style. And Sunderland have had to they've played the exact right way to get enough points on the board to give themselves a bit of breathing room. And you are allowed to change a few things and throw in a few more variables where it's required. Like, would you be better at seeing out a game, for example, if you had Maynard on the pitch? Yeah, you probably would, rather than the blood and thunder. So that's probably an example of where I'd be looking at Sunderland. And that's a profit. That's a benefit of having this many points on the board. You actually have the luxury and ability to consider things like this.
Yeah, we also, aside from when we did the Poznan, when the Aguero moment happened at the Stadium of Light and Man United had to watch us do the Poznan, I don't know why we did that, but it was very funny at the time. We've got a really good relationship with Man United. Like, they used to send us loanees all the time.
Welbeck? No.
Welbeck, Yanazai. Richardson, Yanazai, Brown, Ahmad, nice. O'Shea. Like,
that's it.
We've got such a long history of kind of looking after their young players, and I actually think they'd probably be willing to do that.
Okay. Well, we'll book that one in.
Let's do it. Maney's coming to the Stadium of Light. What a start to the pod. Huge. And I'm getting unlimited access to Turkey as well, because you guys don't like it. Okay, let's move on to Conor Gallagher. So this guy is 25. He's turning 26 in January. I don't think the move to Atletico Madrid has been a disaster. I don't think anyone would say it's been a disaster. But has it turned into the transfer that a lot of people thought it potentially could be, amidst some quite fierce competition in that area? And Simeone's not the biggest rotator of his key cogs, I would say. No, it hasn't turned out the way he would have wanted to. So he signed for £34 million to Atleti in August 2024. He's made 72 appearances since. He's scored 6. He's assisted 6. Last year, he started 23 League and Champions League games. Probably what you're expecting for your first year, adapting to a new country.
That's a decent haul.
Adapting to a new manager. But this year, just 7 League and Champions League starts, 16 appearances off the bench. Just 2 of his 17 league appearances have been longer than 45 minutes. Yeah. 9 have been less than 25 minutes. So I think it is fair to say right now that Conor Gallagher is not a key cog at Atletico Madrid. And there is competition there. Pablo Barrios is a very well-rounded player as well. Koke goes on and on. Marcus Llorente.
Koke's resurrection, if you will, has been the most underplayed storyline of this season. He has been absolutely phenomenal for the entire campaign. Like, Alvarez is clearly their best player, but I still think we're back at a point where Koke might be the most important. Like, and can you legislate for that in the long term? That's the only thing I'd say with the Gallagher one at the moment. It's... I don't know if Atleti would be willing to be like, no, we're going to just, you know, chuck that one away. He's someone who's got, I think he's quite comfortable there. He seems like he's quite happy. He won't be delighted with his minutes, especially with the World Cup coming up. But I do wonder if they would just be like, no, obviously not. He's going to be, you know, a player in this midfield for a long time to come. That's the only, you know, reservation.
They might be. I don't get the vibe that that's, I mean, I think I get the vibe that they're very happy to have him around in the rotation, but I don't know. I'm just looking from the outside in. But I mean, the big problem there is, yeah, so Koke's resurrection, as you so aptly put it, is the problem. That's this season's problem. Last season's problem was the fact that, like, Pablo Barrios just emerged as, like, brilliant key player. Like, Atleti plays so much worse without him. So 2 years in a row, two central midfielders have kind of risen to the fore in his stead. And of course, they've been quite aggressive in the market in the last couple of years too, because Alvarez has come in. obviously a more attacking player, but a sort of fulcrum player. Alex Baena comes in. Like, it's... Thiago Almada comes in. They've done quite a lot of recruitment.
Well.
They're a bit scattergun at points. Some were always going to fall through. And if Gallagher does want to come back to England, I guess I wouldn't blame him in that sense, particularly if a club can offer him consistent minutes.
Yeah. They're also... They're not necessarily nailed on for a top four finish as well. They're already fourth. They're 9 points behind Barcelona. Do they want to lose a player that, as Jack says, is a useful player to have around, that can play a variety of different roles, that seemingly doesn't mind as much as some would? We were talking about Vinicius Jr. in our previous pod of being a bit more of a rotation option, obviously. And actually, Atleti, over the last couple of months, I think have gone slightly under the radar. They've won 7 of their last 9 Champions League games. There's been big defeats in big games. Like, they got
because no one was talking about
Arsenal.
That. Everybody was talking about the fact that Julian Alvarez hadn't scored away from home since September or whatever it was. That was like the only stat I saw in Atleti. Not, hey, have you seen how many games they've won?
Yeah. And I think you look at the fact that I think people kind of forget, and we, again, I feel like I'm going over a lot of ground we've covered in previous podcasts, but we talked about it a bit with Chelsea a couple of weeks ago, I think, about how good Conor Gallagher was in his Pochettino year at Chelsea, and how Enzo Fernandez was actually struggling because Conor Gallagher was playing so well. So in his final year at Chelsea, which was only the year before last, 5 goals and 7 assists in 37 games. Only Palmer and Jackson contributed more goals. He was fourth for shots on target, fourth for passes completed, second for chances created behind Palmer in this squad, first for defensive actions, level with Moises Caicedo. He had an amazing year.
He did. He's really good.
He's really good.
He's a really good player.
And you look at a club that need a midfielder that a lot of people define as more of a sort of shuttler that can do a little bit of everything, that has definitely got a lot of legs. Man United, bring in Conor Gallagher on a short-term deal potentially, and then maybe go and spend the £80-90 million that you need to in the summer if you could get an Elliot Anderson, for example, or Adam Wharton or someone we've already discussed. But would Conor Gallagher in a World Cup year be up for going to Man United on a loan deal, potentially get in England reckoning? I think it's even a long shot, even if that loan goes phenomenally well, but you never totally know.
I think players
past Jordan Henderson potentially.
They tend to do everything they can to give themselves that one last shot, which is totally, totally understandable. So if you're not in the reckoning with 6 months to go, even if it's a 10% chance that you could force your way in off the course of a new scenario, you've got to pick up form immediately, then you've got to make the March squad. Even if that's a 10% chance, players tend to take it. They tend to go for it because playing at the World Cup means everything. I think his best chance is tricking us all into forgetting he's played for England, somehow re-registering for the USA, and then going back to playing under Pochettino, where he played his best ever football, Dookie.
Tyler Adams is out. There's a spot.
If he can somehow find a way to trick FIFA, I think he's in there.
Yeah. You also look, even if it didn't happen in January, I think Man United probably need 2 central midfielders in the summer. You know, Casemiro's going to be 34 in February. He's on £325,000 per week, apparently. He's out of contract as well. I think Man United may offer him a new deal, but on very, very reduced terms. That is a guess. Kobbie Mainoo's future, we've already discussed. Manuel Ugarte, what's happening with there? Is Bruno long-term going to play in midfield? I think Bruno potentially could play in midfield if they sign someone like Conor Gallagher alongside him, although does that fix their kind of aerial issues they've got in there? Maybe not. But Conor Gallagher, I feel like, would be a very good pickup for Man United in January. I think he'd be a very good pickup for Man United in the summer. And I don't think it's going to cost the amount of money that would stop them from strengthening in other areas as well.
Okay, I like it. I like it a lot. I also really like Conor Gallagher, so I would just quite like him to go and play some football somewhere. So
that'd be cool.
I'm all for it. I think it's a good fit. All right. My second player is Marc-Andre ter Stegen.
Ooh, the forgotten man.
Get the hell out of there, Mark. Mm. Jesus. I'm going to read you a real sub-headline from the summer. Barcelona have confirmed Marc-Andre ter Stegen has been reinstated as club captain after resolving a dispute over his medical records following back surgery. The Germany international had initially refused to sign an authorization form for La Liga, resulting in the temporary removal of his captaincy and an opening of disciplinary proceedings. The matter has now been settled, with the goalkeeper back in the leadership role. So, if you can remember as far back as the summer, and football moves so fast and it happens so quickly and so much happens that honestly sometimes I do struggle to remember what happened as recently as 6 months ago. But ter Stegen was basically forced to sign a document which would then allow Barca to sign or to register Joan Garcia, and I think perhaps Marcus Rashford was in that conversation too, because they were facing salary cap issues. They took the captaincy off him, opened disciplinary proceedings, and forced him to sign a medical exemption so that they could create room in a salary cap to register his replacement. And then when they did it, they gave him the captaincy back. Now, in the last couple of weeks, he has returned from that injury, returned from that surgery. And at the time of speaking, he hasn't yet played, although Barcelona are playing a Copa del Rey game this evening, and we'll see if he gets the nod. But if he doesn't, and it's Szczęsny, then like writing's on the wall here for Mark. And we were just talking about players willing to gamble just about everything for that final shot of making a World Cup squad, or doing whatever it takes to put themselves in a better position. Yeah, Marc-Andre ter Stegen and Germany with the World Cup coming up. He's third choice goalkeeper for Barcelona right now, and he has not been treated very well. I think he needs to go. Get out.
He's had some phenomenal years as well. I mean, his first year 2014-15, or was it definitely around then? He was absolutely brilliant. And then they had that brilliant year under Xavi where he went absolutely supernova. He had like a David De Gea-esque season as well. But for the last few years, it's been really, really sad.
That season under Xavi, where he was unbelievable, was the last time I think you could probably genuinely say he was world class. And since then, it has regressed. That doesn't mean he's a bad goalkeeper, but it has regressed. I think that there is a clear difference now in terms of Joan Garcia coming in and just being, you know, just an exceptional goalkeeper. And that's fine, right? The problem is that I think this is going to come down to money owed and all of those things in the background that are also there when you're talking about Barcelona. I wonder if this has to be a loan move, if it is anything. But like, I don't know, bop along to Polanski's newly reinvigorated Borussia Mönchengladbach and see if you can force yourself into that Germany conversation. Because like, I don't think the matter is closed, but like Bernd Leno keeps refusing to go to camp if he's not going to play. And so like, there are like a number of goalkeepers in the conversation. And Oliver Baumann's in there as well. And you know, there's lots of different things going on. But it's not like I think the door is closed on who's going to be, you know, in that squad for Germany. I don't think he's going to be able to force his way into a starting role at this point. But, you know, you want to be there as well as much as anything else.
There in case Neuer gets injured, man.
I think like, a six-month loan spell in the Bundesliga would suit everyone to a degree at this point.
I agree. I had my eye on the Bundesliga for him. It is a matter of, you know, how much can they afford to pay in terms of probably his wages, in terms of a split, because Barca are going to need to alleviate some salary concerns as usual when the window opens, and a third choice goalkeeper and whatever he's on is not going to work for them. They are going to struggle to find a full-time employer for him, but on a loan, I mean, it would be an amazing opportunity for quite a lot of clubs. I was looking in the Premier League, looking down the table. I think it'd be a huge upgrade on quite a lot of different players. And I think like Newcastle, he's better than Newcastle's goalkeepers. Mm. He's better than Spurs' goalkeepers. He's better than Man United's goalkeepers.
I quite like Lomons.
I think he's fine, but we've got a long way to go on sure. Senna-Lemons. A lot, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
I think the thing is, you don't know necessarily what you're getting with ter Stegen, because like he's barely played any football for like 18 months at this point, and he was already on a little bit of a spiral before that. So like, if I was Man United and you have Senna-Lemons in there, I would be going nowhere near this for the sake. Like that feels like for the sake of it. I think if you could get a 6-month loan spell at Tottenham with the chaos that's going on there, that's slightly different. Mm. If I was Man United, I wouldn't be pulling the trigger on ter Stegen just for 6 months. I would probably do that if I was Spurs.
I would. I think. Well, we don't know exactly how.
I don't think
he is
I'd be doing
days,
that if I was Newcastle.
But I'm not. I'm not particularly taken with Vicario still, and
Venom.
With Venom. Yeah, sure, if you want. I mean, never has a goalkeeper ever looked less like Venom. But fine. I think there's something to be done for ter Stegen here, and I think it's high time he got the hell out of there. I'd love to see him move, and I'd love to see him play football again.
I like it. Okay. From a few transfers that may or may not happen to one that is going to dominate the back pages. It did look a couple of months ago like it was going to be Marc Gehi month. I think it will still be Marc Gehi sort of couple of weeks. I think it will be discussed, but Antoine Semenyo feels like he's going to be the big Premier League talking point. It would be remiss of us not to mention it in this podcast as well. Ended what can only be called really a dry spell last night as we record this, with a goal in Bournemouth's crazy 4-4 draw at Man United as well. He had a really, really good game. He won 6 aerial duels, which is actually something you don't really associate him with, but he's so athletic. He's actually really, really good in the air.
Also, his long throw.
Yeah.
My God.
It's crazy. And this guy has had a phenomenal season. And I know people have talked about him a lot, particularly in the first 6 weeks, where he was probably the Premier League's one of the best players, if not the best player, but went through a bit of a dry spell in terms of goals and assists, but still on 10 goals and assists in 15 games for a Bournemouth side that have been a little bit up and down and no one else in that attack, up until last night at least, with Kluivert and Alvar Nilsson having disappointing seasons by their high standards last year as well, have really got going to the same extent. How good is Antoine Semenyo? I think £65 million feels like the most I would pay for him right now, just because I don't know whether he's necessarily, or maybe it's just the role he's been asked to play in this system. I think he's an exceptional dribbler, and I think his shooting off both feet is really promising. I'm not sure he's necessarily the best creator, or at least hasn't put up massive creative numbers just yet, which makes me feel like he would sort of thrive in a transitional team like Bournemouth. But I do have a little bit of doubt in the back of my mind about him in against deep blocks.
But he's got, so because he can use both feet and he has such explosive movements, he can create space. And because he can use both feet, he can shoot off both feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have an issue with him squaring up. Like, I don't have issues with him against deep blocks. I think he squares up a defender and creates a yard, no problem. I think a lot of the shot-creating opportunities he creates, he takes for himself, mm-hmm, rather than hands off to others. And his shot totals are pretty high, which might explain why he's not so much of a creative force. But I think he's seen in this Bournemouth team as the chief goal-getter and the primary source of goals. And I think he has all the liberty in the world to take as many shots as he wants. He's the alpha.
Yeah, he absolutely is. I mean, even this season, you know, you see his goal return just go up once again, or look on track to go up once again. His league goal return has gone 1, 8, 11, and now he's on 7 this season already. His XG per 90 is climbing every season as well. He's on the same amount of dribbles completed this season as Bukayo Saka, the same amount of progressive carries, 7th in the Premier League as Elinoman Jai. This is 8th for carries into the box as well. He really is a phenomenal carrier with both feet. From 60 yards away, if you need to explode past a man, he's kind of your guy. In terms of where he could go, now, this will no doubt be probably out of date by the time this podcast goes live, unlike a lot of these transfers, because it does feel like the big talking point in the Premier League. Man United and Man City are apparently leading the race for his signature. Man United, to me, I would prioritise the central midfield area before you sign Antoine Semenyo, given the fact Mason Mount is now looking a lot better, given the fact Amad Diallo and Mbeumo are now building up a little connection. Cunha's still got to really step up in terms of numbers, but I think he's generally been very good when he's played as well. You've still got Benjamin Sesko. Sign some midfielders. Can you afford to spend £65 million on Antoine Semenyo, which I know is a phenomenal opportunity when you have so much work to do in midfield?
What if you could make him a wing back?
Oh, here we
no!
go. So Miguel Delaney reported in The Independent that Amorim was very, very intrigued by Semenyo's potential ability to play wing back. And I just thought, can you just leave these attackers alone, mate?
Yes.
Although that said, like, you know, how many, I'd love to see a percentage of like, all of in the final third, when Man United get into the final third, what percentage of the touches are actually had by the wing backs? It's probably quite high. So effectively what Amorim is doing is he's sneaking more attackers onto the pitch where possible, which is, you know, it's fine. He does have a nasty habit of making everyone a wing back, which I don't like, but Semenyo as a workhorse winger and a good presser and honestly a pretty good defender along with all the attacking stuff, I guess I can kind of see it. It just seems quite funny to me, but it's not the priority. I think 65 million is right at the very top end for Semenyo, to the point where I'd say it's too much money. Slightly too much money.
Even if Alanga's fit, well, Alanga hasn't proved good value, so that's a silly argument, but Madueke was about 50, 55. Do you think Semenyo's not worth the extra 10?
Well, it's an extra 15.
What, an extra 15?
It's quite a lot of money, that, £15 million, as a percentage on top. I mean, it puts him in the Cunha and Mbeumo bracket, and it's another mid-20s guy signed for 65 million. And I'm like, does 65 million, is it pocket change to Man United? Mm. Like, how can they just sign everyone for 65 million? It's unlimited amounts of checks. They clearly don't have any financial issues as much as they like to tell us that they do. I think it's a bit much for me, mate.
Okay.
I spent all summer saying it's a bit much for me, mate. And I'm doing it again.
Well, the other link, the hottest link right now, and actually Spurs, I think, probably makes the most sense given that they lost Son in the summer and Tell and Odobe need a lot of time, I would say.
Liverpool, I think. Like, you look and at Liverpool. And you think, okay, even if Salah comes back from AFCON and has an excellent 6 months of the season, you've got to start stacking some sort of depth backup in there plan, to kind of, even if you don't redshirt so many, obviously, but you take the point that you're looking at a long-term successor. Like, if they have that money on the table, and look, I would probably point to Liverpool and say you might have bigger priorities to fill in this. But like, if they are looking for someone who is going to step into that role, and they're looking for someone who's going to, you know, do the defensive duties on their right hand side a little bit more, you know, willingly, should we say? Well, Sam's just made that point. So I don't think they should be ruled out of any conversations. And I don't think they should be ruling themselves out of any conversations, potentially, most importantly.
And when we talk about priorities as well, it's all well and good saying, well, actually, you need this, you need that. But like, Semenyo is a market opportunity that has come up. So regardless of the fact that Man United need centre midfielders more than anything, and regardless of the fact that Liverpool need another centre back more than the desert needs the rain, Antoine Semenyo is only available for £65 million for the first 10 days of January. Right,
it does that, make a fun start to January.
So that's the deal. That's the time window for the deal. If that's when you want to do it, fine. And if you think that one or two or three other clubs are nosing around and going to beat you to it, then you've got to act.
Well, the
priorities are one thing, but this is an opportunity, and this is when it comes up
for sure. There's a big shark supposedly in the water as well in Man City. And actually, for me, this feels like a real good dial shifter for Man City in a very tight title race where Arsenal, as we record this, seem to be. Not seizing up, but their last two performances haven't been good. And with the way and the will to win that league title for the first time since, 2003-04, the pressure on Arsenal is going to ramp up throughout this entire season anytime Man City get close. If Man City can sign a sort of player that's in this sort of form already in Semenyo and upgrade on Bob and Savio, who are yet to score in the league. Omar Marmoush had so many injuries, he's yet to score in the league as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've just listed three really good players.
Very good players.
They're really good players. And Marmoush is brilliant.
I do like Marmoush as well.
Where does that leave any of them if Semenyo signs?
I agree. But he can play on both sides, as can a lot of those players as well. I totally agree.
Could he play right back?
I agree. I agree with you. But on this season of all seasons, where only Haaland and Foden have scored more than two league goals, still for Man City. And yes, they do have Cherki to fit in there as well.
Doku's in the season, having a season
Doku's
of his
having
life.
A great season. I prefer it for Man City than I do for Man United, if I'm totally honest.
Fine. I guess I'm with you. You mentioned Spurs briefly. Jack shot you a dark look and you quickly changed over to somebody else.
No, Jack just wanted to talk about Liverpool, but I think it makes a lot of sense for Spurs because...
Well, they tried to sign him in the summer, didn't they, more or less?
Son left us, I think, in their top five appearance makers of all time, goals and assists of all time. I think he might be their top assister of all time. And people just sort of... Because he was a bit underwhelming last year, but despite putting up pretty good numbers, but he was just so off at performance level. I think people kind of underestimated how big a departure that was. And obviously Simmons, there was an idea that he could play on the left. I think he's proven that he's much more better when he's in the middle, and they
also
kind of need that progression.
Wilson Odobert is definitely, to me, their best future potential option at left wing. Like, I think Odobert's going to be a really good player.
And is he there yet?
No, of course he's not.
Yeah. So I don't mind Semenyo coming in, who can fill in on both sides as well. Kulusevski, hopefully he comes back soon, but they do need more attacking impetus. So I prefer in teams that need him most, I'd go Spurs top, then probably Liverpool, then City. But it's City and United, according to reports today as we record this, that seem to be leading the race.
I don't like any of it.
Really?
I'm not going to lie, I don't like any of it.
Keep him at Bournemouth?
Yeah, why not?
Fair.
I don't like any. I don't know. It just doesn't sit right. You know, sometimes you don't get the right feel from a transfer. It's the timing. It's the price. It's the fact that I do suspect Semenyo is pretty much maxing out right now, and there might be a bit of regression. I don't know, man. It just spooks me. And that's not to say I don't like the player, because I am one of the original Semenyo truthers, and I've got the receipts from 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I was texting people saying I'm genuinely scared of Semenyo because I was watching him dribble at my team's fullbacks and making their legs turn to jelly way before he kind of exploded. And I was thinking, this guy might be really good here. And he'd only just moved over from Bristol City. He's proved to be excellent, but this is spooking me.
Too much money.
Spooking me.
It's the spooky
Premier League
season.
It's the Premier League wingers market, man. I hate
it's
it
not
so
spooky
much.
Spooky season is done. It's Christmas season, but you can still get spooked at Christmas.
It's the season of giving.
Yeah.
And Semenyo for $65 million is giving me palpitations. Okay, I don't like it. But fine, I understand. Right, my final player, mm-hmm. ranked number one on my list. I don't know why I've ranked him number one. Ooh. Maybe it's because I feel the most sorry for him of any footballer currently in the game.
Wow.
It's James Ward-Prowse.
Oh, yeah. I've actually forgotten about him.
Of
yeah.
course you did. Everyone did.
Oh.
It sucks.
Sorry, James.
No one dislikes James Ward-Prowse more.
Signed on a free to retirement.
than his current manager, Nuno Espirito Santo. And unfortunately...
That is a niche reference from... I think it's from a tweet that I sent, wasn't it? Yeah. What was it? Who was it about again?
Wait, what?
I can't remember. It might have been Casemiro. like, Diggy tweeted this about someone. I can't remember years back. He was like, signed on a free for retirement. like, excellent.
Into the back of the cupboard. No, Ward-Prowse is not going there yet.
No.
He's got life in him, I think. Haven't seen him.
Suggest him for
I haven't seen him for a while. I'm not going to suggest him. He does look good in red and white stripes, but I'm not going
to
suggest him.
And there is a club in red and white stripes. Maybe he could go back to him and get back to his best. Who knows? Maybe. He just needs one more free kick, bro. One more free kick.
Two, really. He's on 17.
Two, one short.
He's on 17 and Beckham's on 18, I think.
I thought they were level now.
Are they level?
I think they're level. Okay. He needs one more to take the record.
One more, bro. At least one more. Possibly two, but definitely maybe one. One more. Yeah, so he's been stuck on this record for absolutely ages, and obviously it's never going to improve if he doesn't play any games. But a bit of backstory here. James Ward-Prowse did a year at West Ham, was fine. 7 goals, 7 assists. Didn't set the world alight, but was fine.
Sorry, he had a season at West Ham where he got 7 goals and 7 assists.
Yeah.
Really?
You started like 31 games.
I mean, if you do take amazing free kicks, I suppose that'll do it.
All of the assists were corners.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, of course they were. Still.
Planted on Kurt Zouma's head, probably. and then fell out of favour a little bit and got loaned to Nottingham Forest.
Mm.
And then was sent back by Nuno in the next transfer in the winter because he didn't want him. So he returned. Nuno said no and he said goodbye. Presumably to Ward-Prowse's absolute horror, Nuno has now rocked up at West Ham. And funnily enough, Ward-Prowse started the season in this team. And I'm not going to say that he was brilliant because no one in West Ham colours were brilliant, but he did play. He started 6 games between mid-August.
He was really bad.
Yeah, they were all
like, as in, they were all bad. But yeah. like the problem was that Graham Potter was playing in midfield with absolutely no legs.
Yeah.
Like no one could move. And James Ward-Prowse was a big kind of factor in that.
Yeah, I think the way the Premier League has changed over the last couple of years quite quickly into the fastest and the strongest has genuinely left Ward-Prowse behind in a quite a shocking and quick way. Because while he was always very tenacious, he was not particularly athletic. Like he was snappy. And he worked hard and he pressed, but he never did anything with any athletic excellence. And so now, if you play in the Premier League as a midfielder, like you have to be unbelievable at so many of those different things. They're all like phenomenal athletes.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
So hang on, let me just finish.
Çalhanoğlu replacement.
He could take Kobbie Mainoo's spot on the bench at Old Trafford. Bring him on with 5 minutes to go for a free kick. He started 6 games between mid-August and September the 20th this season. And he played 90 minutes 4 times. And then 7 days after that final game, Nuno took the West Ham job. And no one on earth has seen his face since, I think. I mean, I don't know. But he hasn't played.
I'll keep an eye on him.
No one hates James Ward-Prowse more than Nuno.
I don't think he's been in a squad.
I don't think, genuinely, he has really? Been left aside. This is the darkest timeline for James Ward-Prowse. It's really bad. So let's find a new home for James Ward-Prowse. The problem is, as I've just said, I feel like the Premier League's athleticism and intensity has genuinely left him behind a little bit. So Jack, we're talking about that record, but I think Ward-Prowse needs to go to a championship club.
I totally agree. Like Harry Winks looked well good in the championship, so therefore James Ward-Prowse would be fine.
The entire top half of the championship, anybody with an eye on promotion, add James Ward-Prowse to the ranks. Find a way to finance half of that guy's wages for 6 months and just let him ping free kicks into the top corner against rubbish goalkeepers. Okay, it doesn't count for his record, but it will win you points. Ward-Prowse could play for almost any of those. Oh, I want to see him playing again.
I like it. For some reason, I've got Ligue 1 in my head. Ligue 1. I'm thinking like Tyler Morton, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, people that have had real drop-offs or haven't really got the opportunities they wanted in the Premier League have gone over to Lyon. Particularly Tyler Morton's had a very good year for Lyon.
He has.
And I don't know why. That sticks out more in my mind than the Championship, although I'm sure Ward-Prowse would rather go down to the Championship.
Well, you don't know what he fancies.
Well, maybe.
He might be so drained by the West Ham experience that he wants to go to Angers.
Maybe.
I don't think so. Although, I do legitimately think there's a very good case that James Ward-Prowse would be excellent at MLS. But I feel like...
DP!
I feel
well,
like
maybe not
bringing...
Even DP.
I don't even know
maybe
if
Max
would.
Tam.
Yeah, like, I think you could bring him into a few sides. There are, you know, a couple of sort of diminutive technical midfielders that have done really, really well in the last MLS season. And I think that would be a really nice landing spot for a James Ward-Prowse.
Oh, that's really good.
You bring him into a midfield like a Minnesota United, who have Triantis next to him so that he has the legs and the energy. Or, Luca De La Torre's contract's just expired at San Diego. Like, put him in there as a Luca Della Torre replace, or Luca Della Torre doesn't start, but bring him into those kind of environments. I think James Ward-Prowse would do very, very well. Like Whitecaps, like at the base of that midfield. There's a couple of sides here that I look at, and as you say, the tenacity I think would carry into MLS in terms of, he's not a physical player, and I'm not saying that he's not unable to move. He's very kind of busy. He's just not big
strong enough for
what the Premier League demands right now. I do think he'd be excellent in MLS, and ahead of this big season, and obviously with the World Cup as well in America, it's a great time to be going stateside. I'd love to see JWP in MLS.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And it's...
Was he capped by England?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Why damn it?
I thought he could play for the USA on residency rules after 6 months.
6 months?
He'd be fast-tracked through. They love him so much.
I don't think so, mate. But the MLS shout is golden. Absolutely golden. I think the top half of the championship would be very lucky to have him. I think most of MLS would be very lucky to have him too. And it's my big wish for the January window, Villa stuff aside, is that Ward-Prowse gets to play a bit of football, because he has quite literally been left out in the cold.
Yeah. Yeah, Breesel. Get him in.
Get
from
him
the
in.
Cold.
Get him in from the... Bring him in. Defrost him. And take him over to the Portland Timbers. I don't know.
I love it, though. I feel like we've covered some niche January transfers there, but fun ones. No one wants to hear about Mark Gehi, and I did cover Antoine Semenyo, but for the 1,000th time this month, You want to hear about James Ward-Prowse going to the MLS and John Stones going to Leverkusen. That is the truth.
John Stones ain't going to Leverkusen. But sure, I get you. Have you got one more, or have I miscounted? You've done all three.
I've done all three.
Yeah. We are full.
We're full.
You are full. But full I would like to say.
Not full of turkey.
No, not full of turkey. There's a couple of ranks legends who, maybe could be on the move.
Oh, yeah.
Redemption arc for Jens Petter Haga. Okay. Someone bring the original truth back to the table.
Yes, okay.
And Stefano Sensi is knocking around in the Cypriot top tier. 30 years old, playing for Anorthosis Famagusta. Somebody dig Stefano Sensi out of there and get him back on the top
table.
Remember
his first few months at Inter?
I went through a period where I was genuinely quite convinced that Stefano Sensi might well have been the best player in the world. He was our age, and every time he played football, Inter won. There's that meme of the bloke sitting at a table is like, convince me otherwise. There's a Photoshop from our BR days of me sitting at that table with the caption, when Stefano Sensi plays, Inter win, change my mind. somebody go and rescue the boy. And it's nice to get the old ranks legends back out.
To be fair, you've reminded me, I do have a couple of honourable mentions to give out. Endrick was going to be in this list until I Googled his name and realised that he's going to Lyon. So that is a pointless conversation. But he was prime January transfer window material, because he has played almost no minutes whatsoever of any significance for Real Madrid, and he looks like he's about fourth choice striker right now, which is quite galling, but he needs to play some football. I figured that Gonzalo Ramos would have also been factoring in here, because he rarely gets to play football except for when PSG have 1,000 injuries, because he's on about 800 league minutes. He's doing really well for Gonzalo Ramos standards. Bear in mind that Luis Enrique clearly hates him and never wants to play him ever. He's managed to find his way into some minutes, so fair play, I left him out.
Minutes before the World Cup as well.
And the last name, I left him out because I think it's more to do with injuries, and I think the Africa Cup of Nations makes this a very difficult deal to pull off. But you actually mentioned Semenya going to City, and I questioned, where does that leave Omar Marmoush? I'm going to be watching this in 2026. Not for January, I think it's too difficult, but if things don't change for Marmoush quite quickly after AFCON, I don't know where this leaves him, because he has barely played this season. And Pep right now is not rotating his team because he's too scared to do it, because only 11 players know how to play his new way. So where does that leave Marmoush in February, especially if they were to make a signing or two? I'm interested.
It's a fair shout. The one other player that you told me not to talk about because he almost definitely wasn't leaving, but I think it will be talked about in January, or maybe it's been used as a contract extension, is Deyoshi Upamecano, who's actually been brilliant for Bayern Munich. I think he's been really underrated his entire time at Bayern Munich. He occasionally has an error in him in the Champions League, and I feel like that is used by people that don't watch the Bundesliga to really...
His errors are pretty big.
Him. They are, but I think they've massively slowed down.
Yeah.
I
also think he's going to sign a contract extension. But aside from my kind of nostalgic shouts, there is a player who I think is really interesting. And Dean and I talked about this on the Boxing Day episode. I'm future planning an episode here. but we did Christmas gifts for managers of top sides. And one of the players that I was looking at, and I'm pretty sure I suggested him for Napoli in that episode, Quentin Timber has 6 months left of his Feyenoord contract. And I don't think he's going to sign a new deal. I don't think Feyenoord can afford to let him go for free, considering how talented he is. I think that's something to keep an eye on. I think he will remain on the continent as opposed to coming to the Premier League. But I do think that Quentin Timber for a Napoli to kind of bolster that midfield rotation, you know, not someone who's necessarily going to expect to start every game, but starts to give you a little bit of life, maybe after Anguissa, you know, looking as the kind of long-term replacement there or something like that. That's the storyline I'd keep an eye on in the January window.
Also, one of my long-term favourite Bundesliga players, Julian Brandt, is out of contract in the summer as well.
Yes, he's in a tricky situation, isn't he? He's started playing a little bit more quite recently, but for like 3 months, he just didn't do anything. No. Doesn't seem to fit.
Doesn't really suit that system as well.
No. He's worked his way back in really nicely. I think he played his 500th game for Dortmund. Or
can't maybe, be. Must be Bundesliga.
500 Bundesliga.
No, because it was a Champions League game, because he scored twice. Maybe it's just his 500th career game. But he scored twice to mark it, which I thought was a nice touch.
Really nice. Really, really nice. All right, that was a lot of players.
That was a lot of
players. We did three each, and then we did like three more, five, 10.
All the January transfers.
Yeah, fantastic. It should be a good month.
It will be.
Well, it might be. I mean, we'll do a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Exactly how much money is spent, I don't know.
But kind of like fun, like small marginal transfers, you know, not just, yeah, here's all the Premier League money.
Yes, which in a way makes it more fun.
Yes.
Because it has to be a bit cleverer, a bit more well thought out. And the big splashes, they really do carry a lot of jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And we just talked about Omar Marmoush. He is obviously a January big splash.
He is indeed.
12 months ago, roughly, he signed for Manchester City along with their first defensive overhaul. And, you know, we could get really lucky and Villa might try and sign three players again or something, because last January it was Rashford, Asensio, all sorts.
And the big headline of today's podcast is Sunderland are signing Kobbie Mainoo.
Exactly, which is great news.
That's fun.
Great news for everyone.
Yeah, love it.
All right, January covered. You don't need to listen to anything in January. It's all sorted. So we're going to take a break on the pod for a couple of weeks, just over the, well, I say festive period. We're right in the middle of it, but the back end of it, into the new year. It's mostly Jack's fault. He's away.
He's on honeymoon.
Lazy bones. Doesn't want to take his microphone. Doesn't want to book flights back to the studio. I've never met a man with a worse work ethic.
Yeah, and also people that watch on video, there will be a new studio in the new year at some stage in the new year as well. So keep an eye out for that as well. But yeah, thanks all the listeners and watchers for your support on The Truth this year. We've loved it.
Yeah, lovely stuff. And I guess we'll just see you in 2 to 6 weeks, depending on when Jack's boat returns from Chile.
Sounds about right. Anyway, at the very, very least. I think we'll be back in the second to last week of the transfer window. So we'll be there to look through the bits and bobs and pick through the storylines that have emerged. But yes, we might be hearing you on the main feed, so we'll keep an eye on it.
What? Are you future planning more episodes?
I'm future planning episodes live as well. Jackson. That's great stuff.
Very confusing. I don't want to come on. I'm saying no now. Okay, cool. Got it. Right, that was a very long goodbye, so let's say a final goodbye. Thanks for listening to us all year. It's been fantastic over the course of the two seasons. Back half of last, first half of this, it's been a blast. And when we come back, we'll be firing from the hip. Lots to talk about, lots to project. I can't wait.
More takes to come.